You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. We begin our program with our focus on municipal elections just over a week away. There are dozens of races across the state, so today we're going to highlight some of the closest and most impactful. I'm joined today by Kyle Fryant. He is the executive director at the Governing Group. Kyle, welcome back to Inside Utah Politics.
Good to be here, Lindsay.
Good to have you. Okay, I call you the local election savant because you pretty much just have your eye on every single one of these races. So I love when you break this down for us. Let us start in Riverton. Tell us about this race, who's running, and why it's so impactful.
You know, it's a really interesting one that has sort of, we've seen this interplay of state and national dynamics with a local race. So Tani McKay is on the Riverton City Council, the wife of State Senator Dan McKay, a very well-known state senator. And she is running against Tish Barroker, who is also on the Riverton City Council. And you have this fascinating dynamic where two city council members going against each other. Tish is endorsed by every one of the other members of the city council. And just last week, it was announced that Mayor Trent Staggs had endorsed Tish in her race. There was a primary election where a third candidate was eliminated, and Tish Barroker won that by about 2-1 over Tani McKay. So now what Tani McKay is doing in her race is she's really trying to draw differences with Councilmember Barroker on their record on tax policy and on who is the most conservative candidate. As we know, Southwest quadrant of Salt Lake County is very well known as a conservative area of the state. And so she's trying to say, hey, this might be a nonpartisan election, but I am the more conservative candidate. And where you have Mayor Trent Staggs, who has really staked out this reputation as taking this nonpartisan office and being very conservative in that office, using it in other partisan elections, U.S. Senate, Salt Lake County Mayor, you're seeing this dynamic where Tani's trying to say, hey, vote for me, I'm the more Republican candidate. On the other hand, though, you have Tish Barroker saying, let's focus on local issues. I've got plans for Riverton's future. And it's just this interesting choice that Riverton residents will have between two very different visions of how the role of mayor should be seen in Riverton.
So interesting. And then you had State Senator Dan McKay, who's Tawny's husband, come out and say, I will step down from the legislature if Tawny wins this election. What do you make of that? I guess we'll call it a tactic, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, so he is up for re-election next year, and he referenced that there has been a criticism that there would be two McKays in elected office. Now, obviously, his wife is currently on the council. He's currently in the state senate. But when you're running for mayor, the spotlight gets a little brighter.
Sure.
And so that seems to be what motivated a lot of that. It's really interesting. It's an interesting tactic. We've never seen something like it before. And it will be really interesting to see with more moderate voters in Riverton if they see that as a tactic that they think is interesting, let's maybe get a more moderate state senator in here, or if they think it's a gimmick. And so that'll be really fascinating to see how are voters thinking through this thing that we as, you know, political folks think is really interesting, but obviously it's the voters that are going to make the decision about whether it's something that's worth talking about or actually impacts the results of an election.
I just think it's hilarious that Dan McKay is like, you can kick me out if you want to, you just have to vote for my wife. Okay, let's move on to Salt Lake City. District Council 3 is interesting. Tell me why.
So Salt Lake City Council has multiple races up this year. It's the end of ranked choice voting in Utah, and this might be the most prominent last example we see of ranked choice voting in the state. So you have three primary candidates for this election. You have incumbent Chris Wharton. He's running for his third term. He's been on there for 8 years. He's saying, we've done a lot on important issues, stayed true to Salt Lake City's values. He's being challenged by two very, very interesting candidates. Blake McClary is a tech executive. He's running, and he has knocked so many doors in that district, has really been putting in the legwork since very early in the year. And then a relatively new entrant into the race, Liddy Huntsman Hernandez, the daughter of former Utah Governor John Huntsman, is running in this race. She's touting the fact that she is the only unaffiliated candidate in the race, whereas everyone else is a registered Democrat. Now, these are nonpartisan races.
Right. But politics creep in, right?
They definitely do. And, yeah. And that's where we've seen Councilmember Wharton has the endorsements of quite a few Democrat elected officials. Blake McClary has the endorsement of former State Senator Derek Kitchen and former gubernatorial nominee Chris Peterson. And so it's an interesting, obviously, the partisan dynamic is very interesting, but also we know in Salt Lake City that running for a third term can come with difficulties. Former Mayor Jackie Biskupski beat former Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker when he was trying for a third term. And so it'll be a question for folks in this predominantly Avenues district do we want to continue a third term of Councilmember Wharton, or do we want to change? And if we want to change, who will that be? Will that be Blake, or will that be Lydie Huntsman?
Yeah, that's so fascinating, because the makeup of the council is very Democratic as well, even though they're all nonpartisan, but we know a lot of them are Democrats.
Yes, to my knowledge, there's only one unaffiliated member of the Salt Lake City Council right now. It's also a sort of referendum on Mayor Mendenhall, who has endorsed Chris Wharton. Do people feel like the council is too lockstep, or do they want a more independent voice? And that'll be interesting, as it's, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether Mayor Mendenhall herself goes for a third term here in a couple of years.
Fascinating. Let's go down south to Provo. An incumbent mayor down there trying to stave off a challenge from a former lawmaker.
Well, once again, another third term situation. Mayor Michelle Cafusi running for her third term. Ran for lieutenant governor under John Huntsman. And she had a primary election. There were several candidates running. It narrowed to two candidates, former state representative Marsha Judkins and Mayor Michelle Cafusi. It was about a 3-point spread in favor of Mayor Cafusi in the primary. So it's anyone's ballgame right now. And it's a referendum for Provo voters. Do they feel like things are going in a good direction? Or meanwhile, Marsha Judkins is saying, things are a little stagnant. We need to elevate Provo. And so it's a referendum not only on the city of Provo and where it's at, but also Mayor Cafusi, who a lot of people see as someone who could run for higher office again in the future.
Interesting. Okay, staying in Utah County, there are three new school board seats that have to have people. So there's like dozens and dozens of people who are running down there, and we don't really know any of them. They're all just trying to get on these three new school boards.
Yeah, so the Alpine School Board, it was the largest school district in the state of Utah, split last year, rather controversially. It split last year, creating three, a West, Central, and South District. Mm-hmm. There are seven members of each of these boards. So, like you
21,
said, 21 seats,
right?
42 candidates. And it's a very interesting dynamic. You've got a lot of candidates who are saying a lot of the same tune, but the big difference for a lot of these races is background. What are people looking for when you're starting out a new school district? What sort of background do you want for your school board member? And so we often think about these things in partisan terms, but in these races, even more so than partisan, it's that choice that voters are making about what are we looking for when we're talking about a whole new school district. Is it experience on a previous school board? Is it business experience? Is it being in the classroom? What is it that voters are weighing with very different biographies in a lot of these seats?
So interesting. We'll see how that one plays out. Finally here, just in our last couple of minutes, I want you to kind of hit some of the bigger cities too. St. George has a mayor and a city council race. Lehigh, same mayor and city council race. And Ogden as well.
Yeah, so St. George, one of the fastest growing cities in the state and in the country. Mayor Michelle Randall is running for re-election. She's being challenged by City Councilman Jimmy Hughes. It was a close race in the primary, about a 5-point gap in favor of Mayor Randall. And two very, they are often touting a lot of the same accomplishments. Mayor Randall's making the argument, if you feel good about where things are, retain me and keep Jimmy on the council, whereas he's making the argument that we need someone who's going to show up more. We need someone who is going to be more fiscally conservative. So an interesting dynamic there. Then you have two incumbents running for two seats on the council. They're being challenged by a first-time candidate, Jamie Levitt, who is a small business owner, has the endorsement of former Governor Gary Herbert, and a perennial candidate, Greg Aldred. So that's a really interesting race down there. In Lehigh, the mayor's race is it's a choice between 10-year city council member Paige Albrecht. She's running to replace retiring Mayor Mark Johnson. And she's being challenged by an insurance agent, Paul Binns, first-time candidate, who is saying, we have a lot of problems here in Lehigh. It's at the epicenter of a lot of that growth down there. So they're making a choice there of, do we want someone with experience and relationships, or do we need that fresh perspective, even if it comes with some learning curve? And we're seeing that similarly on the council. There are no incumbents, but similar dynamics. And finally, in Ogden, you have in at-large races, Bart Blair is running for another term. He served for four terms on the council, running again, and Marsha White is running again after three terms for her fourth term. Once again, they're making the claim, Ogden's in a really good direction, keep up the momentum. They're facing insurgent challengers who are saying, we actually have more we need to do on homelessness and other issues, and so let's try with a fresh start. So interesting dynamics where you have these long-term incumbents and voters are making the decision, is experience a plus or a minus, especially when Utah is dealing with so many of the challenges we have around growth?
Do we want fresh blood? Ugh, did you guys see how he did that with no notes? Like, not a single note, and he just ran through all that. Kyle Friant, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Appreciate your insights, and we will watch all those municipal races as they continue, and we see the ballots come in. November 4th is
November 4th.
Election day, so get your ballots in if your city has an election. All right, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, Salt Lake County is considering a major property tax hike. How leaders on both sides of the aisle see the plan.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, the Salt Lake County Council is considering the mayor's proposal to raise their portion of the property tax by nearly 20%. Now, a new proposal in the budget says the county needs to bring in more money to fund essential programs due to the rising costs and the pressure of inflation. Now, they're hoping the tax hike would bring in just shy of $49 million a year and will help fund things like county attorneys, the jail, and Meals on Wheels. Now, the county says they're doing their best to keep costs low, but in some areas, the spending is out of their hands.
Information technology. So these projects, of course, are all reviewed by the Technology Advisory Board. The biggest number is just hardware and maintenance. You know, the software maintenance agreements, the cost goes up every year. And, you know, it's pretty massive for a county of our size. And those are just contractual obligations. All of this to say is you can't get around the fact that occasionally you have to adjust tax rate to catch up with that inflationary pressure.
Well, the proposal is already getting some pushback. Some seniors worry the hike could pressure them to move.
Well, I'm almost 80 years old, and my husband and I are on a fixed income, obviously, because we're retired now. And it really frightens me that at some point my husband or I might pass away, and I'm not sure if I'll be able to keep my home anymore.
Now, the impact on the average home or business valued at about $638,000 is around $87 a year plus $728 a month. Now, county leaders are expected to vote on the 2026 budget in December. Well, I'm joined today by two members of the county council, Amy Winder Newton and Suzanne Harrison. Thank you both for being here today to walk us through this. Okay, the budget is now in your hands. And I know when everyone hears about budget talk, they're like, cool, wah, wah. Like, this is not a very fun topic to talk about taxes. But the mayor is proposing raising taxes. I guess the first question for you guys is, if this budget were to not change at all, would you support it as is?
Well, I think, Lindsay, it's really important to understand that this is the beginning of a six-week process where the mayor proposes a budget and then it comes to the county council to deliberate. And as a county council member, I take that fiscal responsibility very seriously. I care about stretching every dollar to make sure that we're cognizant of fiscal, you know, our fiscal duties and oversight. And so we will take the next 6 weeks. I'm going to be scrutinizing the budget, looking for efficiencies and making sure that we are providing those essential services that the state requires and that residents need, but with fiscal responsibility
so
at our heart.
Do you support it right now as it is?
We are just digesting it.
So you're saying you don't need to support it right now?
Well, that our job is to dig into it, go line by line, and make sure that we do our fiscal duty as a county council. So we just heard it, you know, a day ago. And so we're taking it in just like the public is right now.
Amy, so I guess what I'm trying to ask is that 19.6%, I understand it's just on a line item, right?
Yeah.
Of your property tax bill, right? That has up to 10, 20 different types of charges on it. But a lot of people taking issue with this 19.6%, is that an okay amount for you?
You know, what I look at is what do we need to be spending? And I always believe government tends to expand and we've got to keep reining it in. And so, no, I wouldn't support it right this second because I believe that there's cuts to be had in this budget. And, you know, there's things that we're looking at right now to figure out what really is the role of the county. Because again, that creep seems to occur sometimes. And we got to rein that back in. We can't be all things to all people, and we're going to have to find some of those cuts. You know, I think we will need a tax increase. Property tax is the one funding source, that as well as sales tax, that we can do as a county. There's other funding sources out there that don't have the same pressure because of truth in taxation that we do on property taxes. We can only take the same amount every year unless we do a truth in taxation hearing like is being proposed. And so we're going to have to do some sort of increase just to catch up with inflation. We haven't had a property tax increase in 6 years. And in those 6 years, you look at food costs and energy costs, It's incredibly expensive for the county. We have some of the biggest kitchens in the whole county when we do, you know, the meals for prisoners at the jail and also our Meals on Wheels program. The food costs have gone up, and we've got to figure out how to capture that.
And so, every year we do make cuts at the county council level and scrutinize that budget, but we're feeling the pressure of inflation at the county just like our residents are, and I take that really seriously. I know a lot of people are struggling and they're hurting financially, and so I'm going to be doing my due diligence to make sure we're stretching every dollar as far as possible.
Yeah. So walk me through some of the things this $48.9 million would go towards, because I've looked over it, and in my mind, there's like 121 new full-time positions. Is that accurate? Is that necessary?
Tell me. I would say I haven't dived into the budget close enough to even know all the specifics there. I do know that there's more prosecuting attorneys that have been proposed in the budget, and that's because we are seeing such an emphasis on better criminal justice reform, being able to help the system overall. There's a backlog. We've got to fix that. And so, you know, there are some things like that that are related to public safety, which is our number one priority. I will say property taxes go into our general fund, and that fund is the only places that those reside. And 74% of that fund is public safety related. And so public safety is our number one priority.
Yeah, I can understand that. What has been cut up until this point? I know you guys are saying we haven't dived into the budget yet. We don't know what is necessary on this list and what is not. But just taking, you know, a high level look at it, is there stuff in there that you're seeing that like, we probably don't need 13 new prosecutors. Maybe we need 10, something like that.
Well, again, we just got this budget a day ago, and so we're still digging in, and that's what we're going to be doing the next 6 weeks. But this past year, we cut and restructured our council staff budget and streamlined that to the tune of $500,000 a year in savings, and it's actually improved service for our constituents and also cut costs. So that's the type of thing that I'm committed to doing, finding the cuts that we can do while still providing those essential services. Some of the things that we have to fund are state required. Like, the legislature has required us to provide some additional services in our clerk's office and in public safety, but didn't provide funding for that. And so that's some of what we're looking at having to fund at the council level. And just like people are struggling with their grocery bill and the increasing cost of food, we're seeing that, you know, that a dollar doesn't go as far with inflationary pressure at the county as well. And it's a really tough situation.
The mayor is asking for 5 new full-time employees. Is that part of that streamlining of your staff or the government? That seems like adding.
Yeah, we haven't been able to dive in, but I will tell you, as of right now, we actually have cut staff from the mayor's budget over the years. She has less staff in her administrative department than our previous mayor had. So there are things that we'll look at. We may not approve all of those full-time employee positions. That's what we're going to be debating over the next few weeks.
What do you guys want people to know? Because I think the news came out this week that a 20% property tax hike, and it scared everyone big time. What do you want your residents of Salt Lake County to know?
Well, go ahead.
I think, first of all, I want people to know that I truly care and am cognizant of how many people are struggling out there financially. It is heavy on my heart and on my mind as I go through this budgetary process, and that we take it very seriously and really care about making sure that we're looking out for those essential services that we're required to provide and that, you know, help our residents, whether it's, you know, adult and aging services, Meals on Wheels, you know, behavioral and mental health services. Those things really improve the lives of so many in our community. And, you know, that balanced with the fiscal responsibility that I really care about is how I'm going to be approaching it.
Yeah, it's hard to know what is essential, what is necessary, what do your constituents want you to spend the money on, stuff like that. So I understand this process is difficult. Let's pull up that the sample of that property tax bill really fast, because I want to show people that this is just a portion of your property taxes. So maybe you guys can explain this to me as we pull it up here. Well, we're showing you there the how much the property tax rate is going to go up, and that it's only about $7 to $8 per month, about $87 per year for an average family. What do those numbers say to you guys when you just look at it?
First of all, just clarify, that doesn't mean it's going to go up. I will tell you right now, my commitment, we will not be raising taxes of 20%. It will be lower. And so we're going to be looking through the budget and finding the cuts. So I just want to be clear. Sure. That doesn't mean this is happening. This is something that we've been given that we're now looking at.
Right. And I understand that process. Obviously, that's what's being proposed, what you're seeing on the screen right there. Okay. So just in our final minute here, is there anything else that you want your constituents to know? Because, again, I think a lot of people are nervous that their taxes are going to go up while inflation is going up, while your grocery prices are growing up. Salt Lake City raised the sales tax just earlier, late last year. I mean, this is a tough time for people.
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, counties have a lot of pressure on them right now because of the criminal justice function that we have. We operate the jail. We have prosecution. We've been designated by the state to be over behavioral health. And you see that in counties throughout the Wasatch Front. Utah County raised their property taxes, I think, 48% last year. Davis County has a 30% increase on the table right now. We are looking at all resources. And one of the things we do well in Salt Lake County that I think keeps our property taxes lower is we invest in tourism. We have our convention centers. We bring people in. They spend their money here and then they leave. We don't have to pay for education and other things. And that's money that we save our homeowners because we don't have to get revenue from additional revenue from property taxes. And so we're doing all we can to make sure that government is lean and mean, that we're providing a good service, that we are reigning in government and not growing government. And we're going to be dedicated to that as we go through this process.
About 10 seconds.
I would just add that those tourism dollars helped fund our My County Rec Pass, which gives every kid a chance to have free access to our rec centers, improve their mental health, physical health, put those phones down and connect.
Thank you both for your insights today. I know you're going to be delving into that budget here real quick and trying to cut where you can. So appreciate you letting me ask you these questions today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Amy Winder Newton, Suzanne Harrison, both from the Salt Lake County Council. Appreciate it. All right, coming up still on Inside Utah Politics, major renovations at the White House, how Washington is reacting to the Trump administration kicking off demolition and construction for a new presidential ballroom. Utah County mail-in ballots shipped out this year with inaccurate information about what you need to provide to vote, but they will not be getting a reprint. Clerk Eric Davidson says doing so would cost the county too much money. Now, the issue here is the insert on the ballot, which mentions a new ID verification process using the last four digits of your driver's license or social security number. But that system doesn't start until next year. Now, Davidson says to print the envelopes again, just to change them again next year, would cost taxpayers money.
We took advantage of the printing discount, of the volume printing discount, and had the instructions printed off for both the primary and the general. So we could possibly send out an email to every voter that we have an email address for, but we thought that that would even create more confusion.
Well, this confusion that has happened prompted calls to the clerk's office. But the key thing to know is that your vote will still count as long as you sign your ballot and it matches what's on file. Well, Utah Senator Dan Thatcher will resign from the Senate before the next legislative session. Now, this comes just months after he announced that he was dropping his GOP affiliation after 14 years in the legislature to join the Utah Forward Party. Now, Thatcher says he's doing this to give his constituents the best outcome now. Now, the Forward Party will pick a replacement to serve in his district, District 11, which covers areas from West Valley City to Tooele. Well, the White House is facing a pushback from major preservation groups over President Donald Trump's plan to build a new ballroom. Now, the project involves at least the partial demolition of the East Wing, but some say that move goes too far. Washington correspondent Rashad Hudson reports.
On the east side of the White House, demolition crews continued their work on a $250 million ballroom. The National Trust for Historic Preservation, a nonprofit chartered by Congress, says the East Wing is too important to be altered without a full review. In a letter to the White House, it wrote, "We are deeply concerned that the massing and height of the proposed new construction will overwhelm the White House itself." The ballroom is expected to be twice the size of the White House. Priya Jain with the American Institute of Architects has similar concerns.
So we absolutely understand that the White House is a living building that is constantly in use and has evolving needs.
The demolition of part of the East Wing to make way for a new ballroom surprised many people across the country, especially because back in July, President Trump said the project would not interfere with the existing building.
It'll be near it, but not touching it. and pays total respect to the existing building, which I'm the biggest fan of. It's my favorite.
When demolition began Monday, the president posted online the East Wing would be fully modernized and that the ballroom would benefit generations to come. The White House says the ballroom will be funded through private donations. Reporting in Washington, Rashad Hudson.
Rashad, thank you. Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Stay in touch with us, please, on social media, won't you? You can find me on X, Threads, and Instagram, Lindsay on Air, that's spelled with an A. You can also find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form. Wherever you get your podcasts, just search for Inside Utah Politics. Now, if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out Political Power Ranker. This is our next star national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling, who look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. Now, we carry that for you on our free streaming app, News for Utah Plus. You can download that on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and Apple TV. Well, thanks again for joining us this week. We will see you next week.